Just about anything can be a euphemism if you say it right.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Renaissance Fair shop owner Byron Miller. We talked to him about taking his shop Broomhilda on the Renaissance Fair circuit.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hey, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
I am wet. It's been raining a lot. That's what I'm trying to say. A lot of rain.
Our house is pretty dry, but Tim brings wetness with him wherever he goes.
I brought wetness into your home.
We're professionals. We're recording here at the Deepwood Mott. The Glover household.
Stronghold of House Glover.
With our guest back again, Byron Miller.
Hello. Yay.
And we've had Byron on a couple times before. He suffered through God's Not Dead 2 with us recently.
That was amazing.
God's Not Dead 2, the re-deadening.
Yeah.
This time it's personal.
And you are the proprietor of Broomhilda.
That is correct.
Which is a shop that does super fancy, like...
How do you describe your shop?
We are crafters of handmade brooms, walking sticks, and magic wands.
What?
Oh, yes.
Magic wands, hold on. Record scratch.
Do you make everything yourself, or do you have people that you contract out to? I mean, you have a pretty extensive inventory.
I have several employees, one of whom is most assuredly a dwarf.
Excellent.
And, yeah, I couldn't do it all myself. You know, there's no way.
So you hand make the wands, like do you import the wood? Where do you get the wood that you use for them and things?
Wood is almost entirely domestic just because of the logistics of shipping tons of things across the ocean. Most of my wood right now comes from a mill in Illinois called Excel.
Exciting.
I get my maple and my ash from them.
Do you hand stain them?
Yes.
Because you can't see, but one of the wands here has this super beautiful... like blue into purple into pink tip.
Oh yeah,
I brought visual aids because that's good radio.
It is right. No, it is. It is good. There, this is this photo of a ghost.
Yeah, right, exactly. And the brooms are super like beautiful decorative.
Oh,
is
yeah.
it straw or
it's called broom corn.
Broom corn.
It's a variety of sorghum, and it's made. It was grown initially for or developed for brooms.
And your brooms are functional. There's signs up everywhere that say, you know, like you can actually use them. And oh, they also have my favorite thing.
I have one of your brooms in my trailer.
What? Really? Do you use it?
Yes.
Good.
Excellent.
To sweep the floor.
To sweep the dirt that your errant children track
exactly.
in.
Exactly. That's what it's for. Yes.
You have my favorite thing ever that I have to talk myself out of buying every year because I have nowhere to put it. I just love it. It's the fish. The wooden fish on the
fish
brace.
Sticks.
Yeah, yes. The wooden fish on the brace. Fish so it sticks. Looks like you've got a brace of fish. And it's just, they're just rough hewn wooden
a
fish.
Of wooden fish.
I am a sucker for wooden animals. I love them.
It's been like, we could, before your grandma got rid of before the cabin, we were at your parents' cabin or your grandparents' cabin as well. And it was like, oh. We could put it up at the cabin, though.
They are total.
We could. It's absolutely. We have, the big wind chime booth down by the Robin Hood stage.
Gypsy stage.
Yeah, they have a big wind chime that is a the body of it is a propane tank that has been cut and then painted to look like a bobber.
Yep, with the fish dangler.
And then there's a fish dangling from it.
We got that for the cabin.
We bought that as a gift for her grandmother for their cabin years ago, and those fish, it's just a matter of time.
She thinks she has it somewhere right now. My grandma has dementia. It's sad but sweet, but like it's a positive kind. So she'll talk about things that she has that she doesn't have space for anymore. She's like, I don't know where I'm going to put this. It's like, you don't have that at all.
Yeah.
She's talked about it recently.
So, I was wondering, did you start, I mean, obviously the name of the shop is Broomhilda. When you started did you just sell brooms and walking sticks? I'm kind of wondering, because the wands are, I mean, when I've been in your shop, it seems like the wands have taken over a little bit in terms of your sales. Yeah. But I'm wondering when that happened. Was there a transition, or was that always?
Would you say it was around like 1998?
It's been a slow and steady process.
Was there a 7-part but 8-part in execution tiered system by which your wands took over?
I was making wands in the mid to late 90s, and I make a lot more wands now.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
for a variety of reasons, but obviously. There's the fact that many people who were 11 years old back then are now spending their own money.
Exactly. Yeah. And for their kids.
And their children.
Yep. Well, and there's, like, so this wand has mischief managed on it. You know, that's cute. It's I like that a lot. We've been...
So, I make companion wands. One says mischief managed on it. The other one says, I solemnly swear I'm up to no good.
Oh, that's
and
great.
The I solemnly swear is outsell the mischiefs by about 10 to 1.
Really?
Because I solemnly is I'm about to conduct mischief.
Ah.
Mischief managed is that I'm finished. And no one wants to commit to being finished.
I need a mischief managed wand, Nick, because we did the...
Yeah, yeah.
Our thing is bespoke mischief, so that's what we've been saying is mischief managed.
Yeah.
As a way of leaving, because it's a cute note to end on, so now I can do it with a wand.
That's, I have to admit, I never read any of the Harry Potter books, and I'm right now in the middle of the audiobooks, the Jim Dale.
Oh, those are great.
They're super amazing. I'm like just about a third of the way into Goblet of Fire.
Excellent.
What other fairs do you do?
I do, let's see.
Do you do the whole circuit? Like, is that your whole time, all the time job?
Yep. We do Arizona, Oklahoma, Sterling, New York, Bristol, here, Minnesota, and North Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you had a home festival, which one?
That's New York.
New York.
Yeah?
Okay.
Yep. Not that that's where I started from, but that's where we have decided to settle, is in the Finger Lakes area of New York State.
So that when you get to be at your house and everything, like that's awesome.
Do you have a downtime? Like, is there a fallow month, or
really,
are you just always moving?
January, December are low times. But December is online sales, and January is a little bit of recovery before Arizona starts in January.
Does Scarborough go into December?
Scarborough is spring. That one.
That's spring. What's the one that's right?
TRF.
It's North Carolina.
Texas
and TRF.
Okay.
Yeah, North Carolina and Texas Renaissance Festival run concurrently.
Okay.
Those both go through Thanksgiving.
Okay. TRF.
Minnesota
yeah.
run mostly concurrently.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So you have two shops open. You got.
Yes.
So you're here, and you've got your staff that's running other...
Yep.
Yeah, I think, to me, what's really interesting is I don't think most people who come to our fair understand the extent of the business.
No. I explain it every day.
Yep.
And I recall the day that my father stopped saying, well, when are you going to stop and get a real job? Was when he came out to the Arizona Festival and finally, for the first time, looked at it as a business and said, holy buckets, there's a lot of money going around out here. I'm like, I know!
Yeah.
Because there really is.
Yeah. And also on that note, Tim, I think that it's interesting because most of the artisans, or at least at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, most of the artisans are circuit people or people who, you know, travel a lot like that. And then on top of it, some of the stage acts, but a lot of the street is all locals. Like, I don't think we have a lot of traveling
street. Street is very, very, it's difficult to go on the road.
Yeah.
And our musicians too, right?
Yeah.
And so
the problem with going on the road as a performer is if you have more than 2 to 3 people in your group, you're splitting the money too much to actually be able to afford to live on the road.
Mm-hmm. And I actually started on the road as a musician, so I can speak
really?
To that person.
Oh, yeah.
How long were you a musician?
I was a musician in Arizona for 6 years, and then on the circuit for 1.
So you would do music in Arizona, and then you did a shop on the road as well?
Yeah, the band went on the road and promptly broke up, as bands do.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can tell you, it was very difficult to make a living on the road as a music act. Music acts don't generally get paid as much as, say, comedy does, for a variety of reasons, and some of them are perfectly valid. And yeah, it was a very difficult way to make a living.
Yeah, that's...
We've talked about that with Tony Miller.
And Ron, too, talks about it.
And Ron, Seamus, and one of the Tortugas, about, you know, like, if as we retire... to doing like street performing on the road and stuff, and just talking about it with Tony, we don't think it would be a good fit for us, and he agrees, not like, due to any lacking in us, but just like the nature of the job.
I like having a home. Like it's, yeah. I'm not a traveling
there are
person.
Comforts
I never
that
have
we
been.
Don't want to give up.
Yeah,
and that,
yeah.
I need routine in a way that is not conducive to living on the road. Do you feel that you have a lot of routine?
I do actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much more so for a booth owner and crafter than for an entertainer, because entertainers can have their circuit changed on them with much less effort from the festival's part than crafters can, because I own buildings at every fair.
Okay.
Right. So for a fair to boot me is a little bit trickier for them.
But an entertainer, they can just be like, we don't need more entertainers this
Absolutely.
Year. We've decided
yeah.
your contract's canceled.
I think that's another thing that people don't know, that crafters own their buildings
mm-hmm.
and that you're responsible for your building. Or the upkeep mm-hmm. of your building.
But you don't own the land, so if something goes wrong with the land, like a sinkhole or something, they would have to take care of it for you?
Presumably.
Okay.
I was surprised to learn that as well. That topic kind of, I started hearing about it when people were talking about moving the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, moving it to the new site for 2020.
Yep.
And a lot of the entertainers and a lot of the people who aren't, don't have that same kind of financial investment, are like, woohoo, awesome, new site, looking forward to it. Meanwhile, to all the crafters, there's a huge financial investment that to the site moving. And I heard that the site might not even be selling shops in the new site, but just leasing shops or something like that. Like, and I don't know, because we don't...
I haven't
we don't,
heard any of that. That would chalk up as rumor so
yeah.
far.
Yeah.
We don't hear what you guys hear, you know?
Yeah, well, most of what we hear is nonsense.
I was going to say, from what I've heard from other crafters, like who talk on the main Minnesota Renaissance Festival Facebook page, crafters hear even less than entertainment
it's
does
true.
Because
yeah.
Carr, at least, is talking to Jim on a pretty regular basis, and so he's passing a lot more stuff down to us.
Hmm. There has been a lot of discussion with management about moving buildings that can be moved, and some of them would survive moving. Some wouldn't. Some would probably not be worth the effort to move.
Yeah.
Some lots were put up by hippies with free wood mm-hmm. in 1979.
Well, I don't know if moving a building counts as like grandfathering in. Like, there might be new rules for building things, even if they're not.
Definitely.
I'm surprised the historical site isn't, I mean, ironically, like the historical site isn't doing something. Just some of the structures have been around so long, I feel like, I don't know what has to qualify as a
historical
as a landmark anymore, but maybe it has to be older than 45 years. But it'll be 50 by the time the site's going to move, right?
Yeah.
Because what was the first year? 74?
Jesus, yeah.
Are we talking about the festival or these grounds?
These grounds, so 75?
It moved onto these grounds in year three. Year three was when it settled into its permanent site.
Jeez.
And when I started in 1985, I believe it was year 15. So that would mean it started in 71?
That sounds right.
Season 15, so it started in 71.
Okay, okay. So 74, it would have been on the proper grounds, the new grounds. Mm. All right.
So
that makes
sense.
We're
at like 42 years.
42,
so
I was
gonna
say,
45.
Yeah.
Not
so
to figure that out.
That's brilliant. Great radio. Hey, everyone.
Yeah.
So now most of the year you live out of a trailer.
Which, like, it isn't too bad.
Is it a motorhome or is it a trailer?
So I actually have a collection of trailers distributed across the country. Because I have to have a cargo trailer with all of my product and my workshop and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to be working around the country all over.
You
have
a lot of tools, to bring.
Many tools. Literally tons of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And you work during the week.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's another thing that a lot of people see you working there, selling your wares, and
when do you make all this five days a week,
5 days a week, what you're doing is rebuilding your inventory,
replenishing stock, so that
Absolutely.
You can
And that's interesting. Is it ever more convenient just to like get the wood shipped to where you're gonna be?
Oh yeah.
Rather than I would imagine.
Yeah. The I just ordered. Literally 2 tons of wood to be shipped to North Carolina.
Wow.
Where it's going to get started being shaped into product before I even get there.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you... Okay, so have you ever gotten into a situation at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival where you've, you know, been really low on inventory after, like, maybe a banner weekend, you've sold out a lot? Do you find that in Minnesota, you have a hard time selling those last few wands, like the way people won't take the last bar?
Yeah, everywhere. That's not just
Minnesota. Oh, it's everywhere? That,
that's
okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
I always wondered.
People just tell us it's us.
Yeah.
It's everybody.
Because,
no,
like,
the last of any one thing never sells.
Nobody ever... It's so bizarre to me.
I will have the last of one product, and it'll stay there all weekend. The next day, I'll bring in, you know, a whole bunch more, and the one that stuck around all last weekend will now be the first one to sell.
Jeez!
Invariably. No one wanted that one. So there must be something wrong with it, so I'll get a different one.
It's so weird.
So how did... I mean, I'm assuming that you started as the person who was building these items, and now you've trained in other people to be able to do those tasks.
Yes.
But do you remember a moment where you said, I know what I want to do with my life. I want to make brooms and wands and walking sticks.
So I was working for other people. As I was selling drums, as a matter of fact.
At festivals?
Yep. And I decided that I did not want to sell and make drums for a living. That was an option. But it wasn't a particularly good one in my mind. Again, music is a tough way to make a living. And some of our friends who had a broom and walking stick business said, we would like to retire. Would you like this business? And my wife and I said, I don't know. Do we? And they said, well, we sell about this many brooms. And we're like, holy crap, we would like that business.
And they just kind of apprenticed you for a year, maybe? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yep, and then we, over the next few years, bought off the business.
Amazing. Huh.
So you just went, okay, I'm going to sell walking sticks and brooms, and then you learned how to make walking. And that to me is extra impressive because, of course, this is radio, so the audience can't see these things.
That's my entire professional career. Can you do this? Yes,
pictures,
I can.
I'll have to yank some pictures off your website because... what's impressive to me is there is a considerable amount of craftsmanship that goes into what you do.
Yeah.
And I'm very impressed that you were like, all right, well, we are going to buy this business, at which point you had to learn how to do
and
it.
And then we will figure
and
out
you have done it do well. Lessons. Does your wife also?
Oh, yeah. She does at least as much of the work.
Wow.
She
so you both learned.
Amazing.
I like to joke that I make the sawdust and she makes the art.
did you come from a crafting background? Like, did you go to school for anything?
Does
like,
IT count?
Yeah, no. So you did IT. Did you do anything trades? Did you take any trade classes, like hands-on?
No. Among my collection of college degrees is computer animation.
Okay.
With a focus on virtual reality from back when you couldn't use that.
Mm-hmm.
And psychology and astronomy and archaeology.
Wow.
So no. No trades.
So you're just naturally good at working with things with your hands? Are you good at other things like sewing or painting?
It just kind of turned out that way. No, I actually cannot paint or illustrate my way out of a paper bag.
Yeah.
But you sure can, Rich, but you can stain the shit out of a wand.
I can.
It sounds, when you say stain the shit out of, it sounds no good.
No,
sounds...
You stain over shit.
It's just like you don't say, like, I'm going to eat the shit out of that pizza.
Okay, I say that all the time. You know. I'm right here. I say it all the time. I'm sitting right
also,
here.
And also, that's, you don't say.
And also, last night, I ate the shit out of that pizza. I ate a whole half of a pizza.
Yeah. I want your opinion on something. As someone who has traveled around as an entertainer, as a shop worker, and as a shop owner, is the term for your people Rennie or Festy?
Rennie. Festy is Minnesota specific.
What? Is it
so
really?
If we're local, we're Festies.
Yes. Well, no.
If you're local to
Minnesota,
are
Festies.
Right.
Yeah.
In our
but if
festival,
you're local at Texas, you're not a Festy.
If I go to Texas, I'm a Rennie.
Yes.
But here, I'm a Festy.
Only to other Minnesotans.
But, so you would call me a Rennie?
It's Duck Duck Grey Duck.
Oh, no. Oh, so like in Texas, they don't have a differentiation? They just say Rennie to everybody?
Yeah, there are Rennies and there are locals.
Oh, they say locals.
Yep. Like I said, Festy is a... Festy and Fest are Minnesota specific.
Really?
Grey Duck.
It is Duck Duck Grey Duck.
Everywhere else, it's fair.
What?
Yep.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
That's crazy.
I knew the Rennie was
Goose. Why would it be Goose?
Right. You know Grey Duck, right? Are you familiar with this controversy?
It's a Minnesota thing.
Okay, so there's
do
a
you know
game...
Duck Duck Goose.
I do.
Okay,
see,
so the,
we call it Duck Duck Grey Duck.
The correct
only
version of that
state.
Game is
only
Duck Duck Grey Duck.
Yeah, that is the correct name.
If you look at a map of where people say Grey Duck, it is just Minnesota.
You cross
holy
the border.
Buckets.
You cross the border to Wisconsin, and they're like
they say Goose.
Duck Grey Duck.
They say
But then again, they call it drinking fountain a bubbler, so fuck those guys. But okay, so the reason is there's a Swedish game that came with Swedish
settlers
that was Anka Anka Gratanka, which literally translates to
Dark Grey Duck.
Of course. And so our version of the game is the most pure. Everyone else has this fucking tainted goose bullshit.
Also, yes.
And if you tell someone else in another part of the country that it is a sauna and not a sauna, they're going to give you a blank look.
That's true.
That's fine.
Also, by the way, how do you play goose and have any fun? That's terrible.
That's not have fun goosing.
Let me explain. It's duck, green duck, gravy duck. Gross duck. Like you can,
granted duck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a game that rewards imaginative children with good vocabulary.
So of course Molly loves it.
I love it.
I think Duck Duck Goose is more about the running.
Oh, running.
And inherent laughter there.
Yeah.
Children's laughter.
So interesting. Okay. That's good to know.
So we're the only people that say festies.
Yeah.
I hate festy, but fest, that surprises me. Because fest is how I've always heard it. You go to fest,
everywhere else,
I work
it's a,
at fest.
It's a Renaissance pleasure fair everywhere else.
It's what I grew mm-hmm. up with. I mean, I started when I was a kid. So it's all I ever heard is
Tim,
fest.
Have you done any other festivals besides what's the little one that you guys do? The one day wonder.
The Siouxland Renaissance Festival. I worked at the Arizona Fair for a year in 1996. I was actually the assistant artistic director.
What?
Yeah.
Was that Chris?
No, it was under Terry Ford.
Okay.
No shit.
It was like his second to last year.
96 was my first year at that fair.
Well, we probably met and didn't even know it.
No, wait. No, it wasn't. Whatever.
Anyway,
I graduated from high school.
I'm older than that.
I really enjoyed it. There were a couple of reasons. One, it was the coldest winter on record in Minnesota, and I wasn't there for it, so that was kind of entertaining.
What is Arizona?
February, March.
Oh,
yes. It is very difficult to work with that particular owner as a member of the staff and as Terry's right-hand man,
so it was you
pretty much could not hide from him.
Is it Mid-America?
No.
That's the other one.
He is an exceptional
so much
owner.
Better.
How many are there?
Oh, my God.
Are there more than two conglomerates? Yeah. How many conglomerates are there that own festivals?
Jeffrey Siegel, who runs Arizona and Carolina.
Okay.
Those are the only two he runs. Mid-America Festivals runs like seven.
Does Mid-America run literally everything else?
No.
Bristol,
so there's also a third party
there's
here.
There's also REC.
There's more than a third party. A lot of these are independent.
I don't mean like running the
A lot of them are like one-off independent.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of the multi-weekend festivals are not run by one of those,
those
crews. They're their own fair.
So that's just our pleasure.
You're lucky.
Yeah, and I can tell you a lot of stories about working in Arizona, and it was an interesting experience. And I contemplated going on the road and being working as management, because working as an entertainer, you can't make it work. But if I worked as management, I could have made it work.
How old were you in 1996? Were you 28?
Probably. Let me think here. I would be 28, 29.
Yeah, because all right.
So,
you weren't married. Were you married?
I was married. Yeah.
So you and Pat were going to go on the road.
Well, there was some debate there, and we didn't have children. As soon as we had children, that was off the table.
That's diplomatic.
At the time, I'd just taken a severance package from my job.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, this is the perfect time for me to give this a shot.
Ow!
And see how it works. And it was a really great experience that I would never... I mean, I've wanted to be able to spend time on the road, but I'm like you in that I really want some place to go back to. And that is... Uh-huh. That is, and I had kids. And so our entire life changed in terms of how that would even be possible.
Totally.
I know many people who are on the road and do also have a home base that they mm-hmm. see for 6 months a year. But, you know, a lot of times it's the 6 months that you didn't want to be in state X anyway.
Yeah.
Like the Floridians go north for the summer and the Minnesotans go south for the winter, and it's all great.
Yeah, it was it was that toyed with, and it was cool, and I wish it could have worked out to even do like one other fair every year.
Yeah.
Which would have been great. Not a one weekend fair, but
something like Arizona or TRF
Brian, if you had to choose a fair that is your favorite, and you're not going to hurt our feelings.
How about you could only do one fair ever again?
What would it be?
A fair that I would never drop is Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah?
Yeah.
Arizona, Carolina, I'll probably always do those.
I need to go to Arizona. I want to see.
Everyone talks about it.
They are solidly run shows that just get better every year.
Eric Knight has always said, like,
and
he's
I
like,
live in upstate New York, so Arizona, February.
Yeah. He has said, Eric Knight said, you know, like, if you come, you know, there's a weekend, he always goes to Arizona every year. He's like, if you come with me, like, you guys could do, you could do street. I'm sure, like, we could talk to people and we could get you in there and you could do your thing. And it's like, oh, that's so tempting. So maybe, not this year, maybe next year, we'll do it. But
for many years, I tried to convince the Dregs just to, like, take a week and go down to Arizona.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we could probably get a couple of shows down there. And let's see what happens. And it just never worked out. You could, I mean, it's expensive.
But
you're basically going on a working vacation.
For sure. It's a working vacation, but it's like, it's fun, it's an experience, and it feels kind of like, I mean, you would at least get to like experience another festival. I feel like that's the more important thing, is the experience of what it's like somewhere else.
And a weekend fair
the similarities
is
and differences will be fascinating.
Yeah.
A weekend
yeah.
fair is not the same. It's
true.
Not the same. So all right, back to
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, oh man.
so I wanted to ask now, and I think I mentioned it at this point, since this is Geeks Without God, at this point you sell, are wands your primary?
They are about
business?
Half of my business now.
So half of your business is wands.
Down from, you know, up from single digit percentage 10 years ago up to a good solid half of the business now.
Now, do you even jokingly tell people that the wands work?
Every day.
So that's an interesting,
well,
as an atheist, like, it's an interesting, like,
no, what I get is, I get asked, do these wands work a dozen times a day? And my favorite canned answer is, they will cast every spell you know.
I like that.
Much like you are welcome to take a test flight on the flying brooms, but I will need to see a copy of your pilot's license, your proof of insurance, and a ministry-approved invisibility charm or cloak.
That's great. I feel...
I frame that sometimes.
I sometimes feel like...
Really
I sometimes feel guilty, or like, I don't know, like, it's a bad thing to do, like, if, as Olive, I'm, like, trying to convince kids about magic being real. You know, it's like, like, we're here and it's magic and wonderful, but, like, part of me is like, don't encourage kids to believe in the spirit realm.
But also, but okay.
And, of course, you can't start casting spells until you're 11.
That's true.
This is all under the guise of entertainment.
Absolutely.
And there's no
yeah
we're the everything here is fake.
That's a good point.
The guy in the unicorn costume is not a unicorn.
What?
I'm sorry to break that to you. Like there's this is under the guise of fun and entertainment. It's not like we're saying like magic is real, but for real though, magic is real.
And I do get asked that regularly. Do you really believe in these? And I try to dodge those questions.
Yeah.
Partially, yeah.
Because it's you cannot answer it and preserve the fun.
Yeah.
Without...
It doesn't matter what I believe.
Right.
Right.
It's a fine response.
Yeah.
Well, and your magic wand will not cast your spells for you. It will help you cast your own spell.
Yeah. This is where I'd be like, everyone knows the wand is just a tool, you fucking idiot. Buy a wand, goodbye.
Much like buying a wrench does not make you a mechanic.
Yes.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, you could also say... These wands will amplify your magical talent fivefold.
Yes.
They work as
five
well.
Five times zero is.
They work as well as homeopathy.
So you sold wands before Harry Potter, and then Harry Potter
somehow
came out. And was there a point where you were like, we have a really great opportunity here, and we need to seize on it, or was it,
you know?
At over time, you started to see that the wands became way more popular.
The wand sales kind of steadily built over the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, and then really within the last two, I realized that I need to be focusing on the wands a lot more.
Hmm.
So over the last, really just this year, I've been steadily devoting more and more of my booth space and time and effort to the wands themselves.
Who carves the fish?
All of us.
Damn it.
Yeah, they're easy.
Well, then I guess I'll just have to thank you all in person for the fish.
You're welcome.
The fact that they exist makes me happy.
You can just carve your own goddamn fish, Molly.
I just said
they were easy.
I wish I had my phone on me during the day, because we do so much physical comedy that we keep our phones in our pouches. It's because I don't want to break my, you know, $600 computer. So, but I always wish I could take pictures of things that I see, and that's one of them. I'm like, it's you see cute stuff and like neat
art. I wish
art
we had a bandsaw.
Yeah.
We have a, what's the one with the arm with the blade that goes up and down?
A scroll saw?
We have a scroll
mm-hmm.
saw.
Yeah, you might be able to make that work.
And that gets us through most of the things that you'd need a bandsaw for.
Husband, make me fish.
I'll show you, it's like five cuts. No
nice. Nice.
That's what I want to make is for a project is I want to make a bench for us to have on stage for
nice.
Wise Fools.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
he's jealous of Tim's bench.
Well,
yes, he has bench envy.
Well, no. Floyd has a bench out
yeah.
that he leaves on stage that we sit on and stuff between shows, and I think it's good for us to be able to rest and sit in a way that rests our knees and ankles and legs while we're not performing.
That's why I sit on that ramp. Yeah,
I know,
it's,
but
yep.
but the ramp is rotting wood and gross and slippery sometimes.
Mm, slippery rotting.
There is a silver lining to the whole new festival site.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
there are a lot of silver linings. It's just that at the same time it's new, and yeah, as a performer, I know the stage that has worked for us is going to be gone. And will there be a stage that works for us in the
yeah.
new venue? And
mm-hmm.
how's that going to impact our ability to draw and retain audience and all those things?
I can tell you that as someone for whom a move is likely to cost literally tens of thousands of dollars,
yep.
I'm good.
I gotta say too, Tim.
Yeah.
Like I know that you have expressed, you know, in the past and this year too, like your concern that because of the way your show is set up for the dregs, that like new people aren't really understanding and they don't get to see the best show because people are buying things and stuff. Maybe the way that your new venue could provide you with an opportunity to kind of revamp the way you do things.
Well,
I
yeah,
mean,
there's
a lot of really cool opportunity.
I'm trepidatious, but I'm
that's
also
fair.
I'm also excited.
Yeah.
I know that, The idea of a shiny new site excites me. The fact that I know who's predominantly responsible for making decisions about that site makes me a little less excited.
Wizard's Flight Zipline, probably not open in 2016, but you know what? Guess what? Maybe by fourth weekend 2017.
yeah, just like the food shops
yeah.
that burned down in the new facade.
It's cool. It's on all our advertisement. We did three commercials about it, but don't worry. It's going to
yeah.
be great.
It's literally
great.
Mentioned.
Oh, you're going to love it.
I was in two of the commercials, the radio commercials.
You were? That's
year.
Right, I forgot.
And every single little blurb at the end is like, you know, we have this, and new Wizard Flight Zip lip line. And it's like nope. Yeah. Anyway, so Byron, last time you were on when we talked about Pope Francis.
We did.
You
oh,
answered
God.
Our new five questions, which means now it's your turn to ask five of your own questions.
Excellent. I am almost prepared for that.
Cool. Since you're almost prepared, I will just apologize, listeners. You might hear some noises. Gatsby has decided to start destroying a cardboard house, and I'm not going to take it away from him because that just means he'll keep me up later.
Also,
so.
It's like he loves doing it so much that, like, how could you stop it? It's so adorable.
As long as he doesn't meow, but you might hear some rattlings.
We've already heard some meowing on that.
Oh, yeah, they're fighting.
So,
that
yeah,
happens.
Yeah.
That's what you get in Deepwood Mott. We can't close them up. It would yell worse.
The sound of laceration, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you lock them out, Bengals sing you the song of their people.
The song of their people is screaming. It sounds
basically,
like they're dying.
Basically.
All right. You ready?
You ready?
I am.
Let's
oh,
do it.
Oh, wow. All right,
so... question number one is probably a pretty obvious one. Have you guys always been atheists, or was this a tremendous 180 life change from a, you know, conservative Christian upbringing?
I think just to speak generally and for myself, I think most of us have some degree of like a Minnesota Catholic Lutheran or whatever upbringing, and we all gradually through a Wicca or some new agey kind of belief stage before eventually
it's a gateway religion.
I had a
really.
Serious Wicca phase.
Yeah, and I was
like,
down with some like
super serious
some like Viking dudes passing mead horns
nice,
around
nice.
And stuff
yep,
like that.
I say true.
Ooh, you should see I've got a walking stick that I just finished yesterday with Vegvasir on it.
Oh.
It's a really cool sigil that's for travelers,
neat.
Good luck. It looks really neat.
I was raised liberal Catholic.
But devout.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, I was raised liberal Catholic.
All right.
Went to church almost every weekend. I was confirmed Catholic.
That's
and did some New Age crystal-y shit when I decided the Catholicism wasn't for me.
Is but that like, was that after you joined the Renaissance Festival, Tim? Did the crystal
was,
stuff come after
it,
the?
It did.
Yep.
No
yep.
Question.
Yeah.
No question.
What was her name, Tim?
Actually, it was just the friends I hung around.
They're all
it
right.
Was by not.
Us.
There was not.
Yeah. No. I.
It was not for a girl. I wish it had been, but. The fairest
all right.
answer.
I even moved it. I'm
they're
sorry.
They're remodeling.
The fairest answer that I can give to that is I don't think I ever really bought it.
Yeah.
I think that everything I did was trying to find a way to understand what everybody else saw in this religion thing that I didn't. And eventually I just said, you know what? I'm going to stop pretending that this is real because I just don't see it. So
that is exactly what Nick said the last time we went to Assemble when we left, was just like, I feel like I'm just gonna stop pretending this is real. Like it's like it, I wouldn't say I believed in it wholeheartedly, but
no,
like,
but like
pretend, but like playing the part and getting into the ritual,
yeah,
pretending it was real, like
sure.
was comforting, and I was the same with Wicca, like that's what I did a lot.
It had meaning without it being supernatural or magical.
Yeah, I knew none of the spells I was casting were really working, but if I believed they did, it made me feel better, and I did all these things, and I bought these herbs, and it was, you know, now I see it as being
like,
predatory.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing magical about like boasts, brags, and you know, telling good stories and
no.
stuff. Which is kind of that was the center of it for me, but
yeah.
You know, it just all the same. It wasn't.
It's weird that the bragging part was your favorite part.
No, well, no. See, a brag is a promise. A brag is of what I'm going to do.
I know.
A boast is something I did.
I know. Yeah. I'm making fun of you. That was a jest, husband.
Jess wasn't a part of it.
Jess.
No, but there were plenty. Yeah, we did tell plenty of jokes over the horn.
Yeah.
Question two.
And how about rent fairs? When did you guys... we've heard a little bit about your start, Tim. What about you guys? When did you start doing it?
Nick,
and why?
Nick auditioned for Vilification Tennis in 2011 and got in. And...
because I won the amateur show.
And won the amateur show and got in. And then that year, we got season passes as patrons because Vilification Tennis is not a paid show at the festival. We are this weird renegade group of volunteers that get stage time and... We are not an official act. We don't. We're not.
Imply condoning.
It's super
show.
Weird.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
super weird. And so we're
the most guerrilla stage act.
It's true.
Yeah.
And so Tim decides who plays. And so if you are in Ville and you come out in costume and you want to play Ville, you get to play Ville. Like you get put in the rotation with everyone else. So we came out every day because we just thought, let's see it. We were patrons. We came out every day. Most days we stayed till almost close, but a lot of times
yeah.
we would go home at 2 because fuck it.
We'd show up maybe 10 or 11.
Yep.
Go see Piss Poor. I'd go do Ville. And then maybe we go see a different show or
eat
2.
Eat some food. Be
eat
patrons.
Some food. And then, you know, if we wanted to take
garb.
Off, we'd take off. And if we didn't want to take off, we'd stick around. But I was wearing a kilt then.
Yep.
And the same... red shirt that I bought when I was 13
but,
years old and coming to the Renaissance Festival.
But so the next year I auditioned for Ville and got in, and so then it was like, okay, cool.
Also winning the amateur show.
Yeah, but nice. So we got offered, Ville 10 got offered to do the stocks, and it didn't work out because of
that's
arguments.
That's a long story.
It's a long
yeah.
story.
And the details
didn't work
aren't
out.
Important.
Carr was like, well, I feel bad that you guys gave up your volunteer. We were going to volunteer with the children's games. So I feel bad you gave that up. So if you want to be on entertainment, you can be street performers. I can't pay you anything. I can't give you anything. But
it's
if
too
you,
late for you to go through academy.
I'll give you hard passes. And so that's what we did. And we just, within the first weekend, became Beefcake and Olive and just did our thing.
Nice.
And
yeah.
really liked it.
And then last year, our friend Eric Thompson proposed a short form
yep.
show, Wise Fools Improv. And asked us to be a part of it. And so this is our second year doing that, but our fifth year as entertainers.
Tim, when you started, how old? You were 17?
I was 17. My Jeez. Story is long, and I will not tell the whole story. But
hit the
what
high points.
Happened was, especially back when I started, what would happen is a bunch of people in high school would like try out for the show. And this happened like several times. There would be like
mm-hmm.
one high school where like 3 or 4 people would try out for festival, and they'd all get in, and they'd all come back to all their theater friends in high school and say, you guys, I worked out at the festival this year. It was amazing. So yeah. That's what happened. A bunch of my friends tried out for the festival one year. They came back. They're like, you guys, I tried out for festival. It was amazing. So the next year, like 10 of us all tried out.
Nice.
And made it into the festival. Now, every single one of those people is gone. I'm the only person left from that group.
Are they dead?
Some of them, yes.
Sorry, that got sad.
It's been a long time. But
old.
And since then, I've done pretty much everything. I was a street performer for a very long time. I've done a solo stage act. I've been a musician.
You were Thomas Odinson, the inventor, right?
Genius.
Thomas Odinson, genius.
So there's a neat common thread to all these stories. I see it reflected in myself. I started very in the beginning doing Renaissance fairs, my very first Renaissance fair, because it was somewhere I could play diddidgeridoo and get paid for it.
Yeah.
Which is still amazing to me.
Everywhere else it's a didgeridoo don't.
That's right. And I'm actually seeing with a lot of people that the rent fair is somewhere they can go to do X and be appreciated.
Yeah.
And make a living at it. It's also somewhere where I find it especially good to make a living as an artist, which is always challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that I get paid to be ridiculous. Yeah. That's what it is. I am paid to be ridiculous for 12 hours a day.
There's a structure, infrastructure there in place for, we're going to build this crazy place, come do crazy things there, and you'll
get
money.
Festival of enabling.
Yeah, kind of.
I'd always been told by people that I had a good singing voice, and I never believed them, and the festival is what finally gave me confidence to sing in public.
That's awesome.
It's the most capitalist version of a hippie artist commune there is.
What did you,
that's true.
Real quick,
there's
Tim, what did,
that
you,
conflict there.
What did you do to sing before the dregs?
I started leading the Peasants Sing-Along after Terry Foy retired from leading the Peasants Sing-Along. And there was just singing really well-known traditional songs that at the time, not so much anymore. So like Virgin Sturgeon, which probably the listeners don't know, but which is the song that I am, quote, known for, unquote. I learned that at that Peasants Sing-Along. I learned that and then... I learned Charlie there.
Yeah.
Ramblin' Rover, Wild Rover, all these traditional songs I learned there. And I sang it there. And then I went to Arizona the year that I was in Arizona. And I had picked up the Boron. And I got to Arizona. And what happened at Arizona was every musician at Arizona was like, you can play the Boron? Come play with us. And I was like, I'm not very good. Now, part of the reason I said that is because there are some amazing Boron players in Minnesota. Ken Larson came out of Minnesota, and he's brilliant. I mean, he does things with a Boron that you don't think can be done with a Boron. So
like
I'm like,
butt
I'm all right. I can at least keep a beat. So
racism.
Literally everybody who played music out there asked me to come play with them, and one of the people that asked me to come play with them was Eddie Jeff Cahill, who's a guitar player and a singer.
Legend.
And he's been around forever. He worked at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival in its first year.
Oh, wow.
So even though he doesn't work there anymore, I mean, he's been around festivals
since
they started, basically. And he and I started singing as a duo in Arizona, and then we played together for a while. And that's
Eddie Jeff's a great guy, and he's a great musician, too. He's on my album as well.
Absolutely. Amazing.
That's awesome.
All right, question three.
All right. Why the podcast? Why Geeks Without God?
It was Tim's fault. It's Tim's idea.
It was my idea.
I blame all the blame to Tim.
So what happened is we started doing a Vilification Tennis podcast, which didn't...
R.I.P. in pieces.
it was bleh. Whatever.
It was
like
ill-fated.
Six episodes.
But I was like, sweet, I like doing this podcasting thing. I wonder what kind of podcast I can do. And I was like, well, I am an atheist and I am a geek, and I do not see any podcast out there that combines those.
There must be others.
So he came up to us after a meeting and was like, hey, I want to start an atheist geek podcast and be funny. You guys want to be on it? And we were like, yes. That sounds amazing. I would point out, I had really known Tim... Like, I had been Nick's wife for a year, but, like, I'd been myself at this point for maybe 6 months, because you were my coach for Ville. So he had only really known me for about 6 months, and he'd known Nick for about a year and a half. So it was back in July 2012 that we did this, and we started recording within, like, 2 weeks.
We did.
Yeah,
I was looking for people. I mean, I was, like, And it was really like sitting there going, all right, I want three hosts. I want at least one of them to be a girl. I want them to be people that are experienced.
Oh, yeah.
That have stage experience. And I was like, and the reason Nick and Molly popped into my head was because they were a couple, which meant that it was going to be a lot easier for the three of us to get together because we didn't have to try and coordinate three different schedules.
Yep.
I was coordinating two different schedules.
We have a lot of appeal because there's two of us with one mind.
One schedule.
It's the same reason that we started being a Ville team was because if our team sitting or playing meant we both got to sit or play, it just made it easier for everyone else.
My brother is going to be out at the festival on Saturday, so we want to play. We want
and
to
my
prevail.
Friends from work are going to be out on Saturday. That means one team plays instead of two.
Right.
Because I try to make sure that if you have people you know in the audience that you get to play that day.
Nice. It's more fair to our castmates that way as well, and we have good stage
chemistry. Nick and Molly were basically me going, I'm looking for two people that I know are good on stage because I want it to be... that I wanted it to be entertaining and fun, and I'm like, I need people that I know... have that stage experience and are also great big wonkin' geeks and very vocal atheists.
And like, I am very organized and proactive about being on like scheduling and that kind of thing. So like, it's not like, it's not like with two people who are pretty flaky and who tend to not show up for things a lot. Like it's like knowing that, cause we knew we were going to do a weekly show and it was going to be like, this is serious. We're committing to this. And I mean, it hasn't always been easy, but that's one of the things that I think
we have. We're all big geeks, but we all have some same geek stuff and some different geek stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so we all have some like strong passions that none of the others of us are super passionate about. So we get to cover a lot of different stuff that way.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Question four.
Yeah. Okay. Shut up, Cassie.
Speaking of, why does your cat look like a snow leopard?
So Gatsby is the white one. Gatsby is, they're both Bengals. Gatsby and Trisket. Trisket is the orangish one.
I've never seen a white Bengal.
So he's a snow Bengal or a silver Bengal.
It's beautiful.
So they have spots and stripes, and they are
really
part
spots,
Asian.
Like
they're part Asian leopard wildcat.
Yeah, Asian leopard cat.
Yeah, but they
kind of like a ocelot. They eat birds and they fish.
We like them because they Bengals are the dogs of cats. They come when you call. They play fetch. They are really personable. Unfortunately, they also meow a fucking lot, which is why we record at Tim's house and not our house all the time.
They're also very high energy. They have kitten-like play behavior even when they're older cats.
They scream.
And they sing the song of their people. They Trisket will go into the little small hallway by the first floor bathroom where there's the best echo, and he will just scream like he's being murdered. And when we have guests over and they hear it, they're like, is he okay? Like, yep. Just likes to hear the sound of his own voice.
It's just literally the sound that you imagine a cat makes when it's dying. Like, if you've ever heard, I don't know if you've ever heard an animal dying, it's an awful thing. So just imagine that, a cat, and it's like, it's just low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the oldest cat is the one who's chill, who's under Molly's chair. That's Hot Pocket. He's my cat from before we were together.
He's like, he ducks and covers once in a while.
He grew up in a 9-bedroom punk rock house where people were coming and going at all hours of the day, and there were raucous parties, and it was a disgusting house. Absolutely.
I lived in a house once where I had a piece of box furniture.
He's
unfazed. Like, you can't, you know, people like coked up and drunk showing up at 5 a.m. and being like, there's a cat, I'm going to pet it. You get over things. You know, traveler kids who are train hopping and bringing their dogs in, and, you know, strange new dogs in his house. He had to get over it. So he's unfeasible.
Question five.
Last one.
Question five. Is four questions good enough?
Apparently not.
Oh. I say yes.
Oh. Molly says, wait, is this a vote? Are we voting?
Wait, well, I have one. Hey, Byron, how did you get into Harry Potter? So I realized Harry Potter was the thing. I realized I had a story for you. When I was doing festival music, and I had a winter job at a Barnes & Noble in Maryland. Mm. And new books launch all the time, and typically when you get a new book, you get a case of the books, you get 300, 400, or 500 copies for something you expect to be a New York Times bestseller. And I was aware of the Harry Potter series, but I hadn't read it yet. And while I was there, book number 3 launched. And we got 4,000 copies. They were on pallets all down the
Chamber
center
of
aisle.
Secrets? Is the third? No.
Azkaban.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Sirius Black.
They were, and the pallets were all wrapped up in saran wrap. And,
uh-huh.
and there's always the, you know, do not open until the next day.
Street
note from
date.
The publisher.
Yeah, yeah.
And on these, there was, I swear there was under penalty of death in there. And,
wow.
And notes from Barnes & Noble, you will be fired.
Yep.
If you break this saran wrap. And again, 4,000 copies.
So we get that with ships for Fantasy Flight.
Yeah.
Like when we put out X-Wing ships, we have to ship them to Barnes & Noble early because they have to. We have to send them so many.
Right.
We got 5,000 stores. So you have to send them so many for them to have enough in each store that it's the same kind of thing. And we, when we sent the Force Awakens stuff, Target leaked something. Someone in Target posted a picture that was a leak of something happening, and I don't have any way of knowing what happened, but I'm pretty sure Target probably ended up like doing something.
In that case, you're not just dealing with Target, you're dealing with LFL and
exactly. So I can only imagine with Harry Potter and mm-hmm. when things are hot, like it's
So that event was what told me that Harry Potter was something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm getting to the books now. That not having been in read them yet. I like the movies just fine.
Working in a fantasy world, it's
It's
good to have that reference.
The second year of Convergence, I think it was Azkaban that came out during the convention.
Wow!
And what happened literally during the convention was a significant subset of the convention disappeared to their room until they had finished the book.
That's
great. Good thing it's a light read.
That's great.
It was, wow. It was
that's the last light
God,
read.
I love our people. We're such great people.
But I mean, think of another book series where that
no.
could have
no,
ever
there
happened.
Aren't any.
The Dark Tower, maybe, but
no,
that's even a smaller group.
It's not as pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally the most popular book in the history of books.
It's crazy. Good for, hooray for unseating the Bible.
That's right.
Fuck the Bible.
And good for, like, I'm glad it happened for J.K. Rowling, who's
absolutely.
A, you know, she realizes how lucky she is and how talented she is at the same time, and sounds like she has some of that IP stuff
absolutely
in her favor.
And now we're all looking ahead to Fantastic Beasts, and we know that's going to be a trilogy. So
Chris Child was great.
Another 10 years
of goodness.
So I'm looking forward to getting into that stuff.
Again, it's a good time to be a geek.
This is my dream for the Harry Potter universe that I wish she would do, is I want her to start editing anthologies. About every author out there would kill to have the opportunity to write a short story in the Harry Potter
universe.
I mean, maybe not, but curating. Going out and saying, hey,
like
Neil Gaiman.
Yep, Neil Gaiman.
Like,
Patrick Rothfuss.
Would you like to write a story in the Harry Potter universe?
Stephen King.
You can write about anything you want. You don't have to have Harry or Hermione or Ron in there.
Yeah.
In fact, they'd probably be off limits.
Well, yeah. Nameless auror chasing down a dark
wizard.
Somebody
went to Hogwarts.
Someone or some other school or whatever.
I have to believe that a series of books like that would
kill for sure. J.K. Rowling, we know you're listening. Please listen to our sage advice.
You're English,
free
most
of charge.
Most English people are atheists, so you probably are listening to this.
There's a great quote from Douglas Adams about how England has slowly transitioned from vague wishy-washy Anglicanism to vague wishy-washy agnosticism, because atheism involves expressing too firm a point.
Totally.
Strong an opinion.
That's awesome. Byron, we are. When is this going up, Tim?
Tuesday.
It's going up right away. So there'll be one more weekend in Minnesota. And then after that, where are you next?
North Carolina. 5 days after that?
Broomhilda. Check them out. Whenever fair is near you that they come to, and mentioned them earlier.
If you had a wand that is far more reasonably priced than the wands you can purchase at the Harry Potter land.
Yeah.
Also, it wasn't made by some hippy-dippy who thinks it's real.
And
atheist-made wand.
I mean, they're all unique. Like,
absolutely. That's, and I do sell online too. If you check out broomhilda.com, Hilda's called spelled HILDE.
We'll link to it for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for being our guest and coming back, Brian.
Thanks for having me back.
Everyone else, you know, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Check us out on Patreon. We get our episodes up early for most of the time, sometimes days, sometimes weeks, one time on the same day. And you can, you know, if you throw us a few bucks a month, you can get all these like way early usually. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Brooms are sweepy things.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I feel dumb for being excited about it as I am.